Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
This is continuing coverage.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now back to the courtroom.
There's one for the state, one for the defense. All right, State, call your next witness. All right, who is your next witness?
Detective Chris Gillum.
All right, go ahead and bring the jury in. Welcome back, everybody. As you're finding your chairs, anybody talk about the case back in the jury room, talk about the case with anybody outside the jury, or do any research on any of the things we talked about. Everybody says more. State, call your next witness.
Detective Chris Gillum.
You saw this for a firm testimony you're about to give, will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do. Hello, sir. My name is Judge White. I'm presiding over this case. Just make yourself comfortable in that chair. Get about 12 to 15 inches from the microphone. It does adjust up, down, left, right as you need. And just speak in a loud, clear voice, and it should pick up everything.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please state your name.
Chris Gillum, G-I-L-L-U-M.
Where do you work?
Manatee County Sheriff's Office.
How long have you worked there?
22 years.
And did you work somewhere else before for several years? How many years?
Yes, City of Palmetto Police Department for 12 years.
Okay. And what position do you currently hold at Manatee?
I am currently a domestic violence investigator.
And how long have you been in that unit?
12 years.
How, I said in that unit, but if you could just describe, does Manatee County Sheriff's Office have a unit for domestic violence?
Yes, we do. We have 4 detectives.
Okay. And where and how is that unit housed?
We are housed at our building is the 3500 block of 9th Street West is the actual address. And within our building, it's my unit and the Crimes Against Children detectives as well.
Okay. Were you in that same position back in 2017 to 2020?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Back then, did your department house Child Protection Services?
Yes, at that time we did.
Okay. And explain that. Were they with you in the same area, or how did that work?
No, they were on the other side of the building. We had our own area, and they were on the completely opposite side of the building.
And were they actually employees of the sheriff's office?
Yes. Okay.
Did you do a lot of stuff with them together? A lot of investigations together?
The domestic violence unit, we did not. Every so often, that was mostly the crimes against children, detectives that worked with them.
And as a domestic violence detective, have you investigated violations of injunctions and that type of thing?
I certainly have.
Okay. Now, sometimes when someone is asking for an injunction, or when an injunction is violated, it can be charged criminally, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Or they can take other actions to address
correct.
The violation. But you're not involved in that other avenue if it's a different court, correct?
Yes, I'm not involved in that.
Did you become familiar at some point with someone named Ashley Benefield?
I did.
And when was that?
December of 2017.
Generally, what were the circumstances without getting into a lot of detail?
She reported that her husband violated an injunction that was in place out of South Carolina.
Okay. And that came to you?
Correct.
And we've heard several mentionings of poisoning. Did this have to do with the same issue?
It was the same case, yes, but I had nothing to do with that investigation.
Okay. So the poisoning itself, you didn't have any contact with. It was just the violation of injunction.
Correct.
Okay. Did you speak to Ash?
I did.
How many times would you say you spoke to Ash?
I think a fair number would be 30 to 40.
Okay. And generally speaking, was that because you were contacting her or she was contacting you?
No. She started contacting me on a regular basis beginning around February of 2018.
Okay. And what was she contacting you about?
She was wanting to know the status of the case and when Doug would be getting arrested for the violation of the injunction.
Okay. And when you do a violation of injunction, when you're investigating a violation of injunction, you can do several things, correct? You can, explain what you can do with it.
We can make a physical arrest in the case. There could be no charges filed in a case, or we can send the case to the state attorney's office.
Okay, so if you send the case to the state attorney's office, what does that mean?
We're just letting them make the ultimate decision if they think there's enough for charges to be filed in this case.
Okay, so it sounds like there's no charges and then arrest and
state.
So you said Ms. Benefield was calling you asking about the arrest of Mr. Benefield.
Yes.
Okay. And what did you tell her?
That the case was still suspended at that point, and when I had an answer for her, I would let her know.
Okay. And so that was the beginning of your conversations?
Yes.
Right? Did she continue to call?
Yes, repeatedly. Twice a week at least.
And speak to you personally?
Yes.
And what was her comments? What were her concerns?
It was the same thing. When was Doug going to be arrested for violating the injunction?
Had you ever told her that he was going to be arrested?
I did not.
At some point, did you decide to forward the charges?
I did.
And is that to the state attorney's office like we talked about?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Did you inform her of that?
I sure did.
Okay. And what was her reaction to that?
She was upset that he was not being arrested.
Okay. Were you able to explain to her that the process and how this was going to go? Were you able to explain the process to her?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And how did she take that?
She was not happy that I was not placing Doug under arrest.
Okay. At some point, did you speak to Ashley Benefield again, and she told you about a court hearing?
Yes.
Okay. When was that conversation?
Around the first week of May 2018.
May 2018. And what did she say?
She just got right into the phone call and requested that I arrest Doug for a hearing that was coming up in Manatee County.
Okay. You just said arrest for a hearing.
Yes.
Arrest at a hearing?
Yes. There was a upcoming hearing in Manatee County.
Okay. And was that hearing involving your case or something else?
It was something else. It was not my case.
Okay. Did you know that there was a hearing or there was even a court issue going on?
I did not.
So she told you there was a court hearing, and did she tell you when it was?
No, that just shows there was an upcoming hearing, and she asked for me to arrest Doug when he came inside the courtroom in front of the presiding judge.
Okay, and what was your reaction to that?
That absolutely would not occur.
Okay, and how did she take that?
She was upset, and at that point, I would call it a dramatic cry, hysterical cry, started happening, and I'm still informing her, we're not going to do that. We're just not going to arrest him in the courtroom. And she made a comment, something to the effect of, if the judge sees you arrest him, this will help me keep my baby. So I thought that was a pretty bold statement. And I'm like, I'm still trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. She just gave birth. Maybe she's confused. And I'm trying to explain to her gently, that's just not going to happen, especially not going to happen for a judge to see to help you in a civil matter.
And did you, in fact, explain all that to her?
Yes, I did.
And how did she react?
We went back and forth 5 minutes or so. We just kept requesting to arrest him. I said, this is not going to happen. happened. And her tone turned from the crying to very aggressive, and she says, you will effing arrest him in front of the judge, and I will make sure you do it.
What did you say to that?
I started pushing back a little bit, and I said, it's not going to happen. Whatever you say or do, you cannot make me arrest somebody in front of a judge, and it's just not going to happen.
And what did she do?
I guess she started crying again and came out with a comment, something to the effect of, I can't believe you're willing to allow Doug to kill me and the baby.
Okay.
And that hadn't come up in this phone call. The phone call dealt with me arresting Doug in front of a judge. And then it turned to arresting, or not arresting him, and allowing me to let him kill her and the baby.
Okay. So that seemed kind of different to you?
Yes.
Than what you had previously been told?
Yes.
Okay. How long did this conversation go on?
20 to 30 minutes, for up to that time, it's probably 20 to 30 minutes.
Okay. And during this time, did the defendant ever seem to understand the process of what you were saying?
No.
And at some point, did she change from crying again?
She did.
What did she do?
It just abruptly changed, and she let out like a screech or a high-pitched scream. And she says, I'll do whatever I have to do to kill my baby or keep my baby, you a-hole.
Okay. So it's a high-pitched scream, or did you say scream or screech?
Like a screech at first, but it was I'll call it a screech.
A screech.
Yeah.
And tell me, what volume is this?
I could just say it's a very loud, maybe top of lung type scream.
Okay. Could you demonstrate to us?
It's impossible. There's no way I could.
Why would it be impossible?
I couldn't get my voice that high. There's okay. No way.
So it was loud and it was high.
Yes.
And she said, can you repeat what she said?
I will do anything I have to do to keep my baby, you a-hole.
You a-hole. And did she say a-hole?
No, she said the full word.
Okay. And after she said that, what'd she do?
At that point, I had checked out of the phone call, and I was pretty much ready to just to hang up the phone on her. And she accused me of conspiring with Doug to get her baby taken away.
And had you even spoken to Doug about custody of the child?
No.
Okay. Were there other detectives around you at the time of this phone call?
Yes, there were two other detectives.
And do you recall their names?
Oh, yes. Detective Patricia Hetrick and Detective Brian Moreland.
And did they appear to recognize that you were on a difficult call?
Oh, they did. And at one point, Brian even asked me if I needed some help.
And at some point, how did the phone call end?
Ms. Benefield terminated the phone call.
Okay. And you seem to have a good memory of this call.
Yes.
And why do you have a good memory of this call?
Because in my 12 years of doing this, I've never had anybody ask me to arrest someone in front of a judge inside of a courtroom. Now, I have had people call me before and say somebody may be appearing in court that I'm looking for so I can arrest them, but I've never had somebody say, wait until he's inside the courtroom in front of the judge.
Thank you. No further questions.
Ross? Just a moment, Your Honor.
Afternoon, Detective Gillen.
Good afternoon, sir.
I want to ask you a few questions about report writing.
Sure.
Do they teach that to you in police academy?
Sure. Back in 1989, they did, yes.
Okay. It's obviously an important part of police work.
Sure.
How many cases would you say, could you average, that you handle in a month?
20.
Okay. And over the course of a year, we're talking about?
300 close.
Mm-hmm. So are you familiar with the saying that they give you in police academy, if it's not in the report, it didn't happen?
I've heard that before, yes.
All right. And that's because the report is obviously more reliable than your memory.
I could understand that, yes.
All right. At 20 cases a month, 2.5 years later, you're into like 600 cases. If you got your report, you can refresh your recollection rather than have to recall off the top of your head.
Sure.
Which is why you want to put critical details in your report, because that's what you want to remember.
Correct.
Not necessarily that somebody had on mismatching socks, but that they had something that's significant to the investigation.
Sure.
All right. So your initial involvement, you told us in the case, is speaking with Ashley Benefield on or about May 31st of 2018 regarding the domestic violence injunction in South Carolina.
That wasn't the first time I spoke with her, no. There were several incidents I spoke several times I did.
Did you speak with her on or about the 31st of May?
I was prior to that.
Okay, about the South Carolina injunction.
Yes.
All right. And just to be clear, we're talking about the same thing. There was a court that had issued an injunction in South Carolina to stay away from one another.
Yes, in South Carolina. That is correct, sir.
Okay. Now, at some point, did you bring any of the reports that you wrote with you here today?
I did.
Do you recall how many you wrote?
Supplemental reports, 3 or 4.
Yes. All right. So initially, if I can ask you about the sequence of these events, Ms. Benefield had gone down to the Manatee County Sheriff's Office to complain about a package that she received because it came while the South Carolina injunction was in effect.
Yes.
All right. And it would have been Deputy Wesley Weber, to your knowledge, had requested a capias based upon Ms. Benefield's receipt of that package.
Correct.
Just so the ladies and gentlemen of the jury understand, a capias is an arrest warrant.
And
sustained.
It's all hearsay.
What is a capias?
A capias is information where someone, a deputy believes that there's probable cause for someone's arrest.
All right. And that was issued by Deputy Wesley Weber.
Correct.
And that would have been on December 14th of 2017.
That sounds correct.
Now, a month later, several months later, on May 31st of 2018.
Objection. I called for hearsay, but I apologize. I'll let him finish the question.
Did you write the first of your supplemental reports?
Yes.
And in that report, you stated that Ms. Benefield...
Objection. Hearsay.
Sustained.
In the report, did you indicate...
Objection. Hearsay.
Sustained.
Did you write anything in your report in describing...
Objection.
Can you approach, right, please?
Hold on. Let me have one more shot at it. Did you document in your report anything different than you told us here today about how you characterized Ms. Benefield's demeanor?
I didn't go into any details in that supplement at all, in that one.
May I show him the report?
Judge, can we approach?
Yes.
During that time, Detective Gillian, back in May of 2018, you overrode Deputy Wesley Weber's capias request, correct?
I did.
Okay. And you put the case on an inactive status?
Yes.
And I think you decided, as you told us, it would be submitted to the state attorney's office.
That is correct.
Now, on June 5th of 2018, you interviewed Douglas Benefield, did you not?
Correct.
And he admitted to you...
Objection. Hearsay.
Sustained.
What was his position with respect when you asked him...
Objection.
Finish the question.
Did you send the package to Ms. Benefield?
Sustained.
Did you make a determination from your conversation with Mr. Benefield whether or not a package had been sent to Ms. Benefield?
Objection, relevant.
Can you ask a question again, please?
Sure. Did you make a determination as a result of your investigation whether a package had been sent to Ms. Benefield?
Yes.
Did you make a determination as to who sent it?
Yes, Douglas Benefield.
Did you make a determination of what the contents of the package were?
It was a T-set.
And was hazmat called?
Objection, Josh. Hearsay.
Sustained. Did you say hazmat?
Yes, sir. As part of your investigation, did you make any determination whether or not there was a response by any other agency to this package that was sent to Ms. Benefield?
Objection.
Sustained.
Did you tell Mr. Benefield that you would be able to unfound the case if he sent you the receipt? I'm asking him if he told Mr. Benefield.
Can you please approach?
Did you tell Mr. Benefield?
Can you please approach? Can you please approach the bench?
Sorry. I think the last question I asked you was, did you tell Douglas Benefield you could unfound the case if he sent you the receipt for the sending of this package of tea?
No.
So did you write a supplemental report as a result of this interview with Mr. Benefield?
Yes.
And this would have been on June 5th of 2018.
That's correct.
Now, did you put and document in that report anything about Ms. Benefield?
I would have to look. You don't mind, I can certainly.
Please.
No, I don't see anything about Ms. Benefield in this supplement.
Okay. You did determine, though, that the package, once you got the receipt, you determined the date the package was sent.
Yes.
And that was on when?
November 27th, which is when the injunction was signed off on by the judge. It was the same day.
But you also determined that the hearing on the injunction was November 3rd, 2007.
That was the hearing, but the judge did not sign off on this until the 27th, which was the same day. So.
Right. But at the hearing, Mr. Benefield was present when the judge announced.
Yes, when he announced, but it was my understanding it's not in effect until the judge granted his signature on the 27th, which is the same day that Mr. Benefield sent out that T-set.
Okay. Who is the lead detective in this case?
For which case?
For the homicide case.
I'm not sure.
Is it Detective Warren?
I don't know.
Do you recall contacting Detective Warren on November 30th, 2020 at 7:47 a.m.?
I do remember contacting him. I'm not sure if that's the date, but yes, I did.
Okay. And do you now recall that Detective Warren is the lead homicide investigator?
I'm not sure if he was the lead. I know that he was at that scene, but I'm not sure if he's the lead investigator.
Okay. So you talked to Detective Warren on that day?
Yes.
You then, 16 days later, Detective wrote another supplementary report, correct?
I'm not sure if it was 16 days later. I would have to.
Why don't you take a look and see if that report isn't 16 days following your contact with Detective Warren.
And when did you say I contacted Detective Warren?
You contacted Detective Warren on September 30th, 2020 at 7:47 a.m.
Yes, I entered a supplement on October 15th of 2020.
Okay. Now, following your conversation with Detective Warren on that day, September 30th, 2020, at 7:47 a.m. in the morning, you write a third supplement, do you not?
Correct.
And it's dated October 15th, 2020.
That is correct.
16 days after speaking with Detective Warren.
That is correct.
In that supplement, you list, do you not, the details of what you described today about how Ms. Benefield behaved?
That's correct.
So let's make sure we understand this now. This is 2.5 years following the discussion that you related to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury of Ms. Benefield's response. 2.5 years later, you remember the details of the conversation.
Absolutely.
And what exactly what she said. Quotes. You quote her.
Yes.
But you never mention one word of it in your supplement that you wrote on June 5th of 2018.
You are absolutely correct.
Nothing further. Let me just check. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Redirect?
Why didn't you add that information to your supplement back in 2018?
In my initial supplement, which was May 31st, I did put in that supplement that she demanded an arrest be made in the courtroom when he appeared. At the time of my interaction with her, I didn't see anything she said at that time as a direct threat to Doug. It had no relevance to my case. I saw this as her just having this massive meltdown because she wasn't getting her way with me. So at that point, it was just not relevant for my case. There was no reason, but circumstances have changed. I thought that's information that needed to be heard.
Okay. So, and what circumstance?
Obviously, Mr. Benefield is deceased at this time. And her words at that time may have had an entirely different meaning. I did not take it as a threat. I took her saying that I'll do whatever I have to do to keep my baby, you a-hole, as my manipulation attempt for the court system, not that she was going to create any harm to Mr. Benefield. Now, she never mentioned anything like that. She was never any threats, but I just took that as a manipulation attempt. When she wasn't getting her way with me, it was a meltdown, and there was just no reason for me to put that in my supplement that she was having this massive meltdown because I wasn't going to buy into it.
And so after she murders Doug Benefield, you thought it was relevant, obviously.
I thought that was very relevant information that needed to be heard.
And did you reach out to someone about that?
I did.
Or did they reach out to you?
I reached out to him.
You reached out to Detective Warren, correct?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. No further questions.
Detective Warren direct you to write this up?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't take orders from him to begin with.
And 2.5 years later, you remembered that she said specific things. This will help me keep my baby if the judge sees you arrest him, quote unquote.
Yes, because it's a very, very bizarre comment I've never heard before in my career.
That's like 600-something cases later.
That's fair.
That's all.
Okay, can you be released from the subpoena?
Yes.
Sir, you're released from the subpoena. You're free to go.
Thank you, sir.
No, I'm sorry, Judge. You are subpoena. Sorry.
Detective Gillum, hold on. Sir, you have not been released from your subpoena. The rule of sequestration has been invoked by the attorneys.
Okay.
That means that you cannot discuss with anyone your testimony here today, the questions that were asked of you. With the attorneys, parties, anyone else, you can't talk with other witnesses about their testimony or the questions that were asked of them. You can't watch any of the proceedings that may be online. You are still sequestered pursuant to your subpoena.
Yes, sir.
State?
State calls Detective Brian Moreland.
Hello, sir.
Hey, how are
As
you, sir?
As you said, just make yourself comfortable in that chair. Get about 12 to 15 inches away from the microphone. It does adjust up, down, left, right. And if you just speak in a loud, clear voice right at the microphone, it'll pick everything up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please state your name.
Detective Brian Moreland.
How do you spell both names?
B-R-I-A-N-M-O-R-E-L-A-N-D.
And we've had some testimony about a Judge Moreland. I just want to make it clear. Is there any relation between you and Judge Moreland?
No, ma'am.
Okay. What is your employer?
Manatee County Sheriff's Office.
How long have you been there?
Since 2004.
What is your current position with them?
I'm a Crimes Against Children detective.
How long have you done that job?
Since January 2011.
And Crimes Against Children, is it known by an acronym?
CAC.
CAC. Okay. So if you hear CAC detective, that's what we're talking about.
That's correct.
All right. So you've worked in that capacity for several years. So you were working in that capacity between 2017, 2019?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What does the CAC unit investigate?
Any crime that involves a child, any crime against a child, I should say. Sexual abuse, physical abuse, malnourishment cases, things of that nature.
And we heard that your office, you share an office space with other departments?
Yes.
And what are those?
The domestic violence unit is also in our office.
Okay. And back then, 2017 through 19, there was another entity in there with you. The Child Protection Services, were they in your...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. DCF was in there.
DCF. Okay. I apologize. The letters have changed over the years.
Obviously, yes.
All right. Did you do a lot of investigations alongside specifically DCF or Child Protection Services, what I call it?
So being in a Crimes Against Children unit, we often work very closely with other agencies, DCF especially. My job as a law enforcement agent is to investigate crimes, basically. The child protection investigators, their job is to protect the children and offer services when needed.
Okay. So they have different goals.
Correct.
All right. When there's an allegation of child abuse, just generally, what is the protocol? To who investigates, who gets the information? Like, how does that go?
Generally, a report will come through the abuse hotline. Law enforcement gets notified, and DCF, or Child Protection Investigator, will get notified, assign the case, and go out. And we usually do that in tandem,
okay.
So we're all there at the same time. And like we said before, different goals.
Different goals, but you're there at the same time,
that's
typically.
Correct.
Okay. And sometimes reports can come in, someone can just walk into the station, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Or call or do something
yes.
like that with the sheriff's
and
office.
And if we get it first, then that deputy, whoever's writing that report, can contact the abuse hotline.
Okay. So I want to talk about, first let me ask you about Detective Gillum. So you said you're with the Domestic Violence Unit.
That's right.
Do you know Detective Gillum?
I do.
Have you worked side by side or at least in the same space?
We've worked in the same office for many years, yes.
Okay. And he just testified about a phone call that he had that he remembers quite well.
Yes.
Do you recall him having an interesting phone call?
I remember the phone. Yes.
Okay. Were you sitting there?
We shared a cubicle wall, so we couldn't actually physically see each other, but we could hear, obviously, everything that was going on.
Okay. And did this seem like a typical phone call that he...
He seemed quite exasperated at the end of that phone.
Okay. At the time, did you know who Ashley Benefield was?
Yes.
Did you later become involved with Ashley Benefield with reference to CAC?
Yes. Okay.
And around December 2019, were there several investigations that came in, started a series of several investigations that came into your department?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to ask you about the first report or the first investigation. About when was that?
I refer to my report.
Sure, go right ahead.
December 10th, 2019.
Okay. And generally speaking, what was the complaint?
Judge, based on prior motions and
Yes, sir. I understand. Overruled. Go ahead.
Thanks, sir. This investigation involved allegations of sexual abuse.
Okay. So sexual abuse, obviously, of a child.
Yes, ma'am.
And who was the child?
Emerson Candy.
And who was complaint against?
Douglas Benfield.
Objection. Oh, I'm sorry. Withdrawn.
Is it the same objection?
No, withdrawn.
Oh, go ahead.
So, did you get assigned to the case?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And so, just as a matter of procedure, when you initially, when Manatee County Sheriff's Office gets a case, you're not initially assigned right away, right?
No.
What happens before you get
Generally, what happens in cases like this is however we receive the report, whether it be through the hotline, whether it gets reported directly to the Sheriff's Office, a uniformed deputy along with a child protection investigator will go out to the scene. The uniformed officer will normally write the information down in a report, and that information gets filtered through our supervision, and if it needs to be assigned, it's assigned.
Okay. So theoretically, on this particular complaint, there had been some work done before you got it.
That's correct.
Okay. And then, did you continue that investigation?
Yes, ma'am.
And as part of that investigation, was Emerson sent to the Child Protection Team?
Yes, ma'am.
And what is the Child Protection Team?
The Child Protection Team is a state-funded team that for...
Same objection, Your Honor.
Sustained.
Okay.
For my criminal investigations.
Sir,
oh, I'm sorry.
Next question.
Okay. Did you talk to Douglas Benefield?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Did you also speak to Ashley Benefield?
I don't recall if I spoke with Ashley on that particular case. I believe she was interviewed already.
Okay. And what did you do with the case? Were any charges filed?
No, ma'am.
Okay. So I want to talk to you about the second report, and that was what date?
Report date was March 21st, 2020.
Okay.
March 1st.
2020.
Generally speaking, what was that allegation?
That was a physical abuse allegation.
Okay. Physical abuse against?
Douglas Benson.
And the victim of that would have been?
Emerson.
Okay, same parties. And how old was Emerson at the time, approximately?
2 years old. Okay.
And again, the same question, had some things been done before you got the case?
Yes.
All right. Did you continue that investigation?
I did.
And at some point, did a second complaint come in before you were finished?
On the 23rd, so March 23rd, 2020, yes.
Okay, so a couple days later. Mm-hmm. And what was this complaint?
It was again physical.
Different than what came in a few days before?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you investigate those two things together?
I put them in the same reports.
Okay. And what did you do with those cases?
No charges were filed.
And I'd like to talk to you about the third report. When did that come to MSO, or when did you get it?
April 5th, 2020.
Okay. And generally speaking, what was that allegation?
Physical abuse.
Of Emerson?
Yeah.
And by
Douglas,
Doug Benefield?
Yes.
And once again, before it was over, did you get another claim?
On the 27th, another deputy responded.
Okay. And what was that complaint?
Again, physical abuse.
Same parties?
Yes.
Did you again investigate those two case numbers together?
Yes.
And what did you do with those cases?
No charges were filed.
At some point, were you a part of what's called a staffing?
Yes.
And what is a staffing?
A staffing is when the entities, as I mentioned before, come together and try to find a good way or moving forward a good way to protect the child.
Okay. And did you attend a staffing on this particular case?
The Lethbridge case.
The Benefield, yes. And as a result of that, were Ashley and Doug assigned to go to therapy with Dr. Broder, or not therapy, an evaluation with Dr. Broder?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Cross?
Yes. Just a few questions for you, Detective
Yes, sir.
Moreland. The cases that you referred to, I think you said there were five of them.
Yes, sir.
I don't want any details.
Okay.
Those cases have to be reported, correct?
Yes.
That's how they're initiated.
That's correct.
And would it be safe to say that in this case, the reporters, without any names, the reporters were...
Objection, calls for hearsay.
Go ahead, finish your question.
Reporters were not all the same.
That I wouldn't know. I'd have to go look.
Do you have the reports with you?
I do have the reports with me.
Why don't you?
I don't know if it's going to tell me who the reporter was.
Clicking something over here. If you are, please stop.
I don't.
Go ahead.
I don't want to know names.
Okay.
Okay. The names are confidential, are they not?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
I just merely want you to tell us whether or not, in fact, the reporters were different individuals. Would you search your file?
I can look. I don't think the reports are going to tell me, but
Judge, I'll reject your say.
Right now, the question is just
whether the reports were from different individuals.
Thank you.
So it appears the report on 12-10-2019.
I just want to, because we're in a bit of a delicate area, Detective, I just want to establish whether or not, if in reviewing your reports, you're able to tell us if the reports were initiated by different individuals.
By looking at my reports, I cannot tell you that, indefinitely.
Did you at any time personally interview Ashley Benefield?
I may have. I don't recall if I ever interviewed Ashley. I know I interviewed Douglas quite often. Initially, when I get these cases, the interviews with her were already completed. So.
Did you at any time personally interview the child?
No.
I don't believe I have anything else. Let me just check, Your Honor. That's all, Your Honor. Thank you.
Redirect.
I believe you said, with respect to did you interview Ashley, that you said by the time it gets to you, a lot of times those interviews have been done.
That's correct.
And that would be by
who? Uniform.
Uniform. And then he asked, did you interview the child? Do you normally interview children?
No.
What is the protocol for children?
Forensic interviews are done by a child protection team.
Okay. And so, generally speaking, you wouldn't say you interview children.
No.
And was this child of an age to be interviewed anyway?
No.
Okay. No further questions.
Sir, can this witness be released?
I'm sorry.
Can this witness be released?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Taylor, can this witness be released?
Yes.
Sir, you're hereby released from your subpoena. You're free to go.
Thank you. Thank you, Judge.
All right, members of the jury, we came back early. We went to an early lunch, so we got back a little bit early. It's now, I think, a good time to take our mid-afternoon break. It is about 2:50. So how about if we take, probably end up being about 15 or 20 minutes. So you can go back in the jury room. You're free to use your phones. You need to send or receive texts or emails or phone calls. Just don't talk with anybody about the case amongst yourselves or anyone else. And of course, as we discussed, don't do any research on the people, places, things, or legal topics you've heard anything about. Stretch those legs and we'll see you back in a little bit. Have a seat. State, looking at the list in front of me, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more on the list.
Yes. I have a question about that.
Yes.
So we've had Dr. Vega kind of on hold. And so I don't know how far we'll get with these next three witnesses. I can have him come here, but my question would be is if it was going to take us past 5, if he comes, can we still do it? Because he's very busy, and I hate to take up so much of his time. Would Your Honor rather, because I know you wanted to hear, deal with some other things, would you rather me tell him first thing in the morning? I know you don't know how long these witnesses are going to take.
I can tell the court that Dr. Brode is going to be up there for a while.
And so should, I just don't, my question is, if I have him come, can we deal with him today? Or do you think once we hit 5 o'clock, if it's before him, you're going to want to go home? Which I understand either way.
Yeah, I would imagine that if it starts pushing 5 o'clock, we'll probably break and start again tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Okay. Okay, as to schedule, that's all I had.
Okay.
I do have something else. If you don't mind, not as scheduling. So the clerk was kind enough to unseal your order, but the items that were attached are evidently in that room locked up. And so I just don't know how we could get a copy because I haven't seen them. And so I just want to address it with the court of how to get a copy.
The evidence clerk is making copies.
Oh, good. Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
All right, anything before the break?
No.
Break.
Yes. All right, we're back on the record. State, you ready?
Yes.
Defense?
Yes.
All right, let's go and bring in the jury.
Thank you.
All right, y'all can have a seat. Welcome back, everybody. Did anybody begin deliberations amongst yourselves, talk with anybody outside the jury about anything about the case, or do any research on people, places, things, or legal topics you bring on back?
No, sir.
Everybody says no. Call your next witness. State.
State calls Dr. Brad Broder.
Please, sir, face the clerk. Raise your right hand. You sworn in.
You saw the swear or affirm the testimony about to give you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes, I did. Thank you. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon, Judge.
My name is Judge White. I'm presiding over the case. As the deputy said, just make yourself comfortable in that chair. You want to be about 12 to 15 inches from the microphone, so you could probably scoot up just a little bit. Adjust this left, right, up, down. And just speak in a loud, clear voice. It should pick up everything. If I hear you breathing, you know you're too close.
Fair enough.
Bless you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Judge, just for the record, we renew all prior objections.
Yes, sir. Overruled.
Please state your name.
Brad Stephen Broder.
How do you spell your last name?
B-R-O-E-D-E-R.
What is your profession?
I'm a psychologist, clinical psychologist, licensed here in the state of Florida and in New York State.
And how long have you been a clinical psychologist?
I got my PhD in clinical psychology back in December of 1986.
And when did you move to Florida? I think you said New York. You
Correct.
Were in New York before.
Correct. I first practiced in New York and relocated here in the summer of 96. I was licensed here by February of 1997 and have been practicing here ever since.
Okay. And do you have your own private practice?
Exactly. I'm a solo practitioner.
Okay. Do you also do some, what I would call, consulting work for the Child Protection Team or Child Protective Services?
Yes, I've been a consulting psychologist to the Sarasota County Child Protection Team since the summer of 1999, and several years later was hired as a consulting psychologist by Manatee Children's Services, which is their name for their Child Protection Team, pardon me, and recently has been contracted with the Fort Myers Child Protection Team. That's just as of this summer.
Okay, and can you just briefly explain what are your duties with reference to being a contractor for the Child Protection Team? What do you generally do?
Well, through the Department of Health, each county in the state of Florida is supposed to have a consulting psychologist on their team. And that is for several reasons. One, it helps out with supervisory cases if on an as-needed basis, as well as once or twice a year, there's supposed to be in-service trainings where you conduct seminars, do presentations to help the staff there. But primarily, it's to attend the multidisciplinary staffings, which they're asking the consultant to come in and discuss, you know, a certain case, what might be going on, if you have any kind of impressions or recommendations. Based upon those kind of meetings, then sometimes the psychologist, myself, would be asked to conduct an evaluation.
Okay. And ultimately, were you asked to conduct an evaluation of Doug and Ashley and Emerson Bennett?
I was specifically asked to conduct a psychological evaluations on each of the parents, both Doug and Ashley, but not their child, Emerson.
Okay. The child was pretty young, correct?
2 years, 4 months to be exact, during the time I did the evaluation in the summer of 2020.
Okay. So you started the evaluation about when? You said summer, but...
I believe it was June 1st to be exact when I first met Ashley, and the next day I had met Doug for the initial intake interviews.
Okay. And what was the general goal? You eventually were going to report back, I would assume, to the entity that hired you?
Yes. Each... Okay. Psychological evaluation is meant to be submitting a report with diagnostic impressions and recommendations based upon the data that's been collected. The evaluation is based upon whatever the CPT recommendation was, meaning referral for the recommended evaluation. In this case, Manatee Children's Services had specific questions about each parent.
Okay. So, and your evaluation is generally focused toward the best interest of the child. Would that be a correct statement?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So you said you first began this around June 1st of 2020?
That's correct.
Did you ultimately complete evaluations of Doug Benefield and Ashley Benefield?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And as part of this evaluation process, did you review documents?
There's a series of steps in any thorough psychological evaluation, which includes collateral data, which both is both defined as interviewing other people as well as reviewing documents, yes.
Okay. And did you do that? You reviewed documents?
If I may, I just brought the reports along with me in case I had to refer to them. But yeah, there was
sure.
a series of documents reviewed for each of them.
Okay. And we don't need to get into specifics about what the documents were, but you did review several documents for each of them.
I certainly did, yes.
Okay. And what is a collateral interview?
That's when I ask each person to give me a couple names of people that they think understands their situation best that I could contact and call and just do kind of a phone interview. If possible, obviously a face-to-face interview is preferable, but based upon where people are situated and located, sometimes it's just easier to have that telephone conversation. So there are certain people, like the people through Manatee Children's Services that I was going to be speaking to, for example, Kimberly Griffin, who is the case coordinator. But in addition to that, I asked both Ashley and Doug for their own people that they'd want me to speak to. But then, of course, doing the evaluation, I have the kind of wherewithal based upon what I learned from them, if there are other people I need to speak to or that I believe I should speak to in order to get a more complete picture of the individual.
Okay. And did you, in fact, do that with reference to both of them? Speak
yes,
to collateral contact?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Did you meet with Doug and Ashley and Emerson together or separate?
Given the structure of their family unit, I had multiple interviews with each of them individually. I had several interviews with them together, a couple of interviews with them together as the couple, but several additional interviews with them when they would exchange Emerson at my office and when we would, you know, kind of see how that the drop-off or the exchange goes. But I had also seen each parent with the child, both in their residence as well as in my office. So there were multiple interviews.
Okay. So this sounds pretty extensive. So how much time did it go on over?
Throughout the summer of 2020, I think the report was actually completed and submitted on September 14th of 2020.
So I want to speak with you about Ashley specifically. Did she ever show any hesitation about meeting you with Doug present?
No.
Did she act differently when she was with Doug meeting you as opposed to when she was not with Doug meeting with you?
As I had indicated or described in my report, she did demonstrate or present with a different demeanor when seen together versus when I would just see her individually.
Okay. And when you saw the two of them together, did they discuss the plans for going forward? And I'm talking about moving. So did they discuss that with you?
Ashley had made it very clear that she had every intention and desire to relocate back to her home state of Maryland. Doug had the impression that this was something that he too could do because he had some connections through the Defense Department and some of the work that he did. He felt he'd have more clients up there, so he was perceiving that as he shared with me, a fresh start that they could reconcile and be together in Maryland.
And when Ashley and Doug met with you together, did Ashley indicate that this was the plan, that they were moving all together as a group?
Ashley had no intention of moving together as a group. She had every intention of moving with her mother and Emerson and becoming situated in her her grandmother had passed away in the mother had inherited the house, so they had their residence established, so she had that plan.
Okay. And so I guess I wasn't being very clear. Were they moving their items together, like same U-Haul truck?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. So Ashley never told you about that?
Quite to the contrary. She made it clear that she did not want him to move in, regardless of what he thought or whatever he was planning. That was not part of the plan.
Okay. And when she was alone, she would indicate to you those things that you just described?
Yes,
or did she indicate that when she was with Doug?
When she was with me during our individual meetings.
Okay. When she was with Doug, how was her demeanor? How was her attitude about those issues?
She would basically respond in a very deferential way. She would let him say what he wanted to say, but my focus was not so much on what their future plans were. They weren't even officially divorced. My focus was, again, getting back to the point about the best interests of the child. Child protection team is, you know, how do we get this family out of this stressful situation and then create something that's going to be better for Emerson?
Did Doug, during your joint sessions, did Doug express in front of Ashley that his hopes that moving forward this was going to be an attempt at reconciliation? Did he express that in front of Ashley?
Yes, he did.
Okay. Did Ashley ever correct him and say, whoa, wait a minute, no, we're not doing that?
Not really. I think the closest she ever got to that was to kind of say, well, just kind of slow it down and, you know, we'll talk about that later, and that's, you know, that kind of thing. She would kind of deflect attention away from that.
Okay. And did she ever say in one of her individual sessions with you, did she ever say anything to you about she was running out of time and needed to move to Maryland or something like that? Do you recall?
Yes, we had that discussion in one of the sessions.
And can you just explain what she said about that?
In essence, she was very frustrated and concerned that...
I understand that it was called quitting.
More continuing coverage is on the way.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Press subscribe now.